flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A lot of bodies on Van Vliet. Green to Thompson.
Hot potato.
Oh, how about that to Shingo? The Rockets just beat the Hawks in their full court press. They do it again.
Oh, goodness.
Look at this. Look by Hunter to give them the lead. Just did miss it. And then the Hawks were pressuring the ball. The Rockets played keep away. Şengün then with the dunk. And they win it 100-96. An ugly win is still a win.
It's funny. The biggest reaction that we've been getting when we've been talking Rockets the last couple days, and it's been a fun week for the Rockets. Two wins over the Cavs, one of them on the road. Win over Boston on Monday. That was the Rockets finishing off the Atlanta Hawks last night, 100-96, in a game that got a little too close for comfort at the end. If you had Rockets -6 in that game, you're probably among the only angry people in Houston, just because they were covering for much of the fourth quarter, and then they let the Hawks sneak back into it at the very end. I was not one of those people.
We talked about this yesterday, and you pointed out, man, this Hawks game where it originally wasn't on the schedule. You just had a couple of really good victories on the road against good teams. This would be a perfect opportunity for a letdown game. And it's not even like you're looking past the Hawks or anything, just physiologically,
just the NBA,
psychologically, yeah, everything else. You got Memphis coming up.
Yep.
There were a lot of reasons where you would totally expect the Rockets to lose and probably not worry all that much about it.
Yep.
That's the really encouraging thing, is that they started off really slow. They got themselves back into it. You had to play more minutes out of guys than they typically get because of all those other considerations. And they let the Hawks back into it, but they fought their way back in the fourth quarter to hold on to the victory. I think it's just, I don't want to gush about it overly, because I feel like they've demonstrated multiple times as of late that, wow, this is a much more professional basketball team than they were even when things were going well early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you feel like you've seen some of these younger guys just kind of grow into their actual professional basketball player status this season.
Yeah, well, and I think that's an interesting point you make about, you know, factoring in the early part of the season, is I think some of what you could have said maybe in October or November when they're playing teams, like when they're playing good teams and they're playing them either competitively or actually beating them, is that the Rockets maybe snuck up on them a little bit. The Rockets didn't sneak up on the Cavaliers. Like, there's no way they did, because they beat them 2 days before they beat them in Cleveland on Saturday this week. And like, that Celtics game, I'm guessing, had a lot of hype coming into it on Monday on the Boston side of things. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, we got this team coming in that just beat the only team ahead of us in the Eastern Conference standings right now. They just swept them. So yeah. there's no sneaking up. Like these teams are ready for the Rockets, and the Rockets are punching back. That's the
encouraging thing. There's not a flukishness to them being where they are in the standings.
Correct.
Early in the season, and you could always say, like, well, yeah, I mean, they're second in the West, but
small sample size.
I think people will point out their. I think at this point in the season, people will point out their. There's no but after. Their standings.
No.
You know, they don't say, well, the Rockets' record is this, but they just say, well, wow, the Rockets are playing good basketball.
The Rockets are good, and they're built to last, too, man. I mean, it's a young core. The guys that are the veterans that are, you know, kind of the leadership infusion. Fred VanVleet, if the team wants, is still here for another year after this. If they feel like that's the solution at point guard, is to pay him $43 million for another year next year. Dylan Brooks is here for another few years after this. Like those, I would say, you know, Van Vliet's getting $43 million a year. Dylan Brooks is getting $20 million a year. And I would say that's $63 million well spent by the Fertitta family.
Yeah.
It's based on what they've brought to this team, you know, kind of how they've helped sort of that combined with whatever they're paying Ime Udoka. Money, very well spent, I would say, for the Rockets. So they beat the Hawks last night, 100-96. Kind of an ugly win. Oh, what I was going to say coming in, the one big sentiment that we're getting, Seth, whenever we talk about the Rockets is don't do anything right now when it comes mm-hmm. to trading. And you and I had gone through some trades, some hypotheticals last week where I think I was kind of intrigued by Kevin Durant. You know, there's a Kevin Durant proposal that some writer did. I'm like, yeah, this looks pretty good. And we talked and walked through some Steph Curry and Draymond Green scenarios last week that we were hot and cold on, whatever. You know, people may say, guys, you guys were encouraged to do some trades last week. What's changed? And I don't think we were that hot on the Curry and Draymond thing. I'm talking more about the Kevin Durant thing. What's changed is they beat the Cavaliers twice and the Celtics on the road. Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I guess, you know, read if you go through the Kevin Durant part of it, I guess that's the one that, because the Draymond Green and the Steph Curry one just didn't make a lot of sense in a lot of ways, especially the proposals that people were throwing out there. The Durant one, that's the one where I'm more tempted or inclined to think, all right, in a 7-game series, is Durant and his scoring ability and just his Kevin Durantness gonna be a factor in a 7-game series versus it's hard to scrap your way through defense and rebounding to a victory over a really good team in a 7-game series if you can't shoot. That's just it's hard to do. That one would still raise my eyebrows in a good way.
It would. Now what gets interesting if you did a deal like that. You know, if you did a deal like that and you're trading off all those first-round picks doesn't affect your rotation this year. Trading Cam Whitmore in a deal like that, along with those picks, doesn't really affect your rotation. What gets interesting is, like, what happened? Does Amen Thompson go back to the bench? The guy's turning into an all-star before our very eyes.
Right, you know? Yeah, the Amen Thompson part of it, too, which is, okay, he's been playing well for a while now, but it's just, his resume keeps getting better and better. He's averaging a double-double. He's playing heavy minutes. They've only lost 3 games when he started. It's rounding even more. Where we were a little bit skeptical of trying to bring in talent from the outside to begin with, now I'm even more skeptical just because as we were discussing it, it was before this really hard stretch.
Yeah.
This road trip specifically is something that we were looking ahead to where it was going to be 3 really good games on a road trip. And so far, they've availed themselves very, very well.
Yeah, this feels like a big turning point in the what should the strategy be, at least for the rest of this year, when it comes to the makeup of this team. Now, ultimately, the playoffs should probably tell you what to do with the makeup of the team, because that's what matters. Like you just said, it's a great point. In a 7-game series, Kevin Durant impacts things differently than in March. When you're going on a, you know, like a 4-game road trip or something like that. So, but the overwhelming sentiment from people seems to be like, let's roll with this. Cause you're right. If you're making a trade, especially for someone that plays, that would take away minutes from Amen Thompson, then you're almost as part of that trade as something you're sending out the door is the potential stagnation of Amen Thompson's development. You know, like that's a factor in all the, like, hey, we're gonna make this big trade, so we're sending out Cam Whitmore, 3 first round picks, 2 pick swaps, so and so's expiring contract. And then you have to factor in that Amen Thompson's minutes are going to go down probably if you bring
Kevin Durant. So another one that wouldn't affect Amen Thompson as much is De'Aaron Fox's name is out there, and Sacramento's shopping him.
Yeah.
Kelly Eco said what he said about a lot of these things so far. He says, through conversations with Kings officials in recent weeks, Houston Rockets officials were aware of the increasing likelihood of a De'Aaron Fox trade. But according to team sources, Houston's stance has not changed, even if Fox is indeed available. So they're not sniffing around De'Aaron Fox.
I wouldn't either.
They're not going around that hen house.
Really good place from here. So it would be a return to Houston, back to his hometown for him here. But I'm not one the Rockets to be in on any of these guys right now. Let's watch this thing and see kind of how it continues to play out. Now, they've got to make some decisions on whether or not they do any of this. The trade deadline is really early this year, it feels. I haven't paid too close of attention to the trade deadline the last couple of years in terms of when it's been, because the Rockets haven't been in a position like this before where you could have the types of conversations you and I are having right now, Seth. But the trade deadline's February 6th. Like, that's it's during the week. We're in New Orleans next week for the Super Bowl, so it's coming up pretty soon here. If I had to guess, I would say there will be no trades. Nothing big for the Rockets. You know, maybe they make a trade for a depth piece or something like that, but I would say no trades. Dana Brown, let's shift gears at the Astros here. Dana Brown did a media availability yesterday on Zoom, and this is in the aftermath of the Ryan Presley trade. He gave some insight as to why this was a trade that made sense for the Astros.
As we build to compete in the present, we're also looking toward the future. And so when you get an opportunity to acquire a young arm like Juan Bello, it's just it's one of those opportunities that, you know, when you look down for starters toward the future, this guy's got a chance to be really good. He throws a lot of strikes. He can mix his pitches. You know, there's some upside to velocity. And so as we compete in the present, we're also building for the future.
Okay. You know how I felt about that cut earlier, Seth, when we played it. I'm like, and we saved $8.5 million of our payroll in the process. Didn't say that, Dana, did you?
Yeah. Juan Bello, you got to... When you've got any chance to take a guy who's had, let's see, how many total? 22 games of experience in the minors over the last
in single
3 years.
A, yeah.
Yeah, and did some good things for Myrtle Beach last year.
Are you going to do an episode on the Seth Payne YouTube channel today, a deep dive on Juan Bello?
Mostly only as a way to think to workshop different puns. I feel like it's a dollar store or something.
It's a
like
very
Five
punnable
Below,
name.
But Juan Bello. He's,
That's good. That's a very punnable name.
Yeah, Juan Below freezing if they're playing in the playoffs in a cold weather game.
Dude,
like, you got to take the guy who Juan Below 30, Juan Below freezing, the freezing point, he's fine.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Lopez is so angry that you got to that before he did. The Juan Below, I like it, that.
Anything to keep me from thinking about Forrest Whitley. I know. We're talking about... I've got him in the notes.
Oh, what was the cut? I got to go find the cut. Well,
because the relievers, with the loss of Presley, look, the relievers didn't do nearly as well as we thought they were going to do last year to begin with. And now you're looking at, okay, you got Abreu, you got Presley. What does Sean Dubin turn into, I guess? There's
Scott.
Well, Taylor Scott, I feel good about. I mean, Taylor Scott, he had the back injury, and he was starting to fall off before the back injury was probably, it wasn't that he was falling off, it was the heavy workload, and that might have been related to why he had the back injury. I assume he'll be fine, but yeah, the bullpen in total, I know, is that the next iteration? Is like, hey, everybody, just remember, keep holding your breath on Forrest Whitley. He could be used as a reliever, and hey, he got, 22 innings pitched last year.
All right,
woo!
Let's play the age-old game that everybody loves, the game that's sweeping the nation. Let's trigger Seth. Here's Dana Brown on the solutions in the bullpen.
You have guys like Van Wey, who you think could be, you know, make some type of impact at some point this year. You have the young guy in Whitley who's got power stuff. You know, you're looking forward for Whitley to take the big jump forward. You know, so we do have some young arms that we feel, you know, are coming as well. And ultimately, building this thing, you want these power arms on the back end, and you want to give these young players some opportunity. And, you know, we feel like this is a good time to do that.
Young guys. Forrest Whitley's going into his 10th year in professional baseball.
He turns 28.
This will be his 10th year.
He turns 28 this season.
I think he turns 27.
No, he's 27 now. He turns 28 on September. I'm looking at his wiki page. September the 16th, he turns 28. Yeah.
Oh. Pro baseball. Okay. Pro baseball reference, getting that wrong. That's a rare one.
Well, maybe Wikipedia's got it wrong. Who cares?
Whatever it is. He's in his 10th year of professional baseball. Right. Right. He's not young.
That was funny to me. That's what jumped out at me. That we got this young guy, Whitley, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, okay, that sounds familiar. Oh, no, wait, he's not young at all. Is there another Whitley that's in their organization that pitches?
I get frustrated that people aren't as frustrated with Forrest Whitley as they are with Lance McCullers, because the Lance McCullers at least has done things for this organization.
I think that's why, though. I think it's two things. I think sometimes it's like no good deed goes unpunished. Like sometimes you're a victim of your own success. We've seen what he can do, and now he's unavailable. And we get upset about the unavailability, and we take it out on the player. And I think the number two thing is he's getting paid a lot of money to rehab all these injuries.
Right. Well, with Forrest Whitley, where I get frustrated is that he's still in the organization and they're still looking at upside. But half the time you hear about Forrest Whitley, it's for a problem of his own creation.
Yeah.
It's a suspension for substance. It's him showing up out of shape in the COVID season. That was the one that did it for me. Who was the coach that commented on it? Oh, it was
With the pitching coach, Brent Strom.
Strom. I know I was blanking on Strom's name, and now I feel I'm gonna have to do penance for that afterwards. Strom basically said, "I don't know why Forrest Whitley showed up out of shape," and then nobody talked about it. And I'm looking around at like all these baseball people, and I'm like, I don't know. Is this what your sport is like? Are you this soft? Why are these baseball writers not making this a headline that Forrest Whitley, the guy who has already been a disappointment 5 years ago, shows up out of shape in the COVID year because he can't be trusted to work out on his own? Like, what am I? Why are you not making it? It was hidden in the middle of the article. They're like, oh, yeah, by the way, Forrest Whitley showed up out of shape. On to other things. And then here he is 5 years later. No, I got no appetite for it.
See, I was only joking when I said it would trigger you. he's been better. He's been less fat and less suspended the last few years.
Well, fat by his standards, which still is like Ichabod
Crane. He got married and settled down. And
that'll make you fat.
He's become a better version of himself. I don't know why I'm talking myself into a guy who's going to be like a mop-up reliever at best. It's like a eat up innings arm in the bullpen.
Look, his most with Sugarland last year.
Yeah.
He had a 1.89 ERA.
Yeah, he was really good at Sugarland last year.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we can go watch him at Sugarland and dominate there. Seth, last I heard,
that was on 30 innings pitched.
People love seeing
it. It was a storybook 30 innings stretch.
Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey.
Oh wait, no. I'm sorry. That was 33.
Don't look up stats last year. Don't look up stats.
I will with Forrest Whitley.
Yeah.
If you're trying to make an argument, if you're trying to cherry pick the little stints where he's actually been good, they're few and far between.
Here's the latest from Dana Brown on the Alex Bregman situation. Still discussing internally. And discussing. Ben's finding the cut, so we've talked
internally about him still being available, and so we are definitely having conversations within our front office. We haven't reached back out to Boris. At some point, it could turn to that. I know that we're taking a deep look at what it would look like if we acquired him, and how would it look for us financially? Does it make sense to do it? We know that he's a talented player. We'd love to have him, but I would mostly say it's all internal conversations. as to, you know, what we would like to do in terms of Bregman.
Would you rather give Bregman a long-term deal at market value or Framber a long-term deal at market value?
Framber.
You'd rather get Framber, yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather get Framber. I don't even have to think, as long as it sounded like I had to think about that for that.
Yeah.
It's more value to your team. He's more consistent. I mean, Bregman's the ultimate professional, but Framber's previously a head case, but he's more consistent than Bregman. So, as far as the one part about that quote, though, is the fact that, all right, the way Dana talks about it, it was initially reported that the Astros reached out to Boris. I'm not 100% convinced that the Astros reached out to Boris. That sounds very much more like Boris came knocking, like, hey, we're still here, by the way. Totally doing great.
Yeah.
But, you know, just in case, you know, oh, yeah, we got all kinds of suitors. But, you know, we're still open to it.
Yeah, Dana,
I think the Astros are in the driver's seat on this one.
Dana Brown is not conducting himself like someone who's hyper-motivated to get Alex Bregman back here. Just
yeah, and I'd honestly be surprised if the initial offer is still on the table the way it was reported. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me that the initial offer is still sitting out there on the table after they already made a lot of moves that make it harder for the Astros to make that initial offer.
All right.
And what's changed? Oh, the rest of the league doesn't like you as much as I guess we thought they would. So, like, no, I'm not. That something has changed.
Yeah.
We're not giving you that same offer.
Yep. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Our good friend Ted Johnson. Remember Teddy J on the Triple Threat back in the day with me and Rich Lord? He is back on afternoons in Boston on our sister station WEEI. His hot take swing is in perfect form right now, Ted. And I think he legitimately feels this way too.
I don't know. I think he might. I think we'll have to evaluate that. I think he painted himself into a corner a little bit.
We will take a listen to something that our friend Ted Johnson said that has everybody up there up in arms right now. That is next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. So our former colleague here at Sports Radio 610, our friend Ted Johnson, has just started back up doing afternoons daily, Monday through Friday. He's on WEEI up there. That's our sister station up in Boston. So it's similar show to what he had when he was on here with me. It's a three-person show. Ted's the former player on the show, and then there's two hosts there that are with him. And they drop a lot of video from their show, or at least a lot of it winds up on my timeline. And yesterday, this one got a lot of run. We know that Ted has had a complicated relationship with Bill Belichick through the years, right?
Yeah, I mean, Ted basically has called Belichick out for, putting a lot of pressure on him to play well concussed.
Practice
or immediately after concussion. Right. So it's been, like, Ted's kind of been out of the circle of trust for Belichick and parts of the Patriots for a while now.
A long, long time, yeah. But he's doing very well, for those wondering. He's back on the radio up there. He does a lot of TV up there as well. And he's not changed his opinions. Like, Ted is still, the parts that he loves about the Patriots, he's very outspoken about, and the parts that he still has issues with, he's very outspoken about. You will never tame Ted Johnson when it comes to that stuff, ever. So yesterday, they got into a discussion, Ted did, with his two co-hosts, about Belichick's role. I guess a big topic had been, it's like the MJ versus LeBron of football, like probably up in New England. Is it Brady or is it Belichick that we give credit to? Anytime there's a lull, you just go to that and that'll get people going. So here was Ted Johnson on the percentage of credit that he would give Bill Belichick for the 6 Super Bowl wins.
You want me to chop it up?
Yeah.
I go 60 Brady. You ready for that? You're not going to like this.
No, I don't think
I'm
going to
love this.
30% others, 10% Bill.
That's Ted Johnson.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Did you just say 10% Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
10%
out of 100?
Let me ask you this. What other coach, how much credit do you give Andy Reid?
I think Andy Reid is on his way to being the greatest coach in the history of football.
So you give him
huge.
What I'm trying to say is, how many coaches would you give even 2%, 5%, 8% credit to for being the reason why you win or lose?
But one big difference there, and this is my argument.
You win.
So Bill Belichick took a sixth round quarterback, 199th overall, correct?
He did at the behest of the
Dick Raybine.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, Dick Raybine.
It wasn't Bill.
I'm saying the talent level. Yeah. The NFL put a talent level on Tom Brady. The talent level was sixth round, correct?
Correct.
So Bill took a sixth round talent and helped mold him into a second year Super Bowl champion by his fourth year in line for debates with Joe Montana. Is could this guy be the greatest quarterback of all time? So he molded him at his most formative stages of his NFL career.
He was the coach as he was being formed. Yes.
I feel like Ted is on the stand. I'm the cross-examiner.
Do you think Tom Brady, if he didn't play for Bill Belichick, would never have won any Super Bowls, that he wouldn't be a great quarterback? If he only played for Bill Belichick, that was the only way he was going to win multiple Super Bowls.
All right.
Okay. All right. There's a lot to unpack there. I feel like where he talked himself into a corner a little bit was with how he divvied up the percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 10%, I can't play devil's advocate on that. I mean, it's hard to keep a job in the NFL for 3 years.
When I saw the tweet before I had even clicked on the video, I saw the tweet. I'm like, oh.
All right. Now this is where this is what I would say, I guess, in defense of Belichick. I argue that he deserves more than 10% credit. This is, stay with me, Sean. I know. Stay with me. Don't interrupt me, because as I try to make a case that Bill Belichick was more than 10% responsible
for the floor is yours, Senator,
for winning six Super Bowls, I'm going to say, this is the thing. I don't know if Tom Brady would have made the team on a lot of other teams.
Yeah.
I think that you have to look at, you know, how lowly regarded he was by other teams. What typically happens to guys when they're sixth or seventh round quarterbacks and they don't have athletic traits or whatever? Maybe hopefully you're on the practice squad. You might be around, but I don't know if you would have made the team. But then also that Tom Brady, as we came to know him and view him as a quarterback, he really wasn't that guy for those first three Super Bowls. I mean, he was very clutch in a lot of ways, but he wasn't that incredible orchestra conductor that he would become until the second half of his career, really. Yeah. And a lot of that comes from, but he was smart and he did things to help win. Like, he was really good at winning football games, partly because they had a really good defense on the other side of him, which is all about Belichick. And I hate getting into the arguments about, you know, who was it, Belichick or was it Brady? Because, you know, the analogy I always use is, okay, who's responsible for a good marriage, the husband or a wife?
Mm-hmm.
And both. Like, you can't have a 10% husband and a 90% wife and consider that a good marriage. Like, it's probably like that. The guy's a scoundrel. He's out cheating on her all the time.
Yeah.
Hasn't had a job in 4 years, but she's a saint.
Yeah.
And that's why they have such a successful marriage.
Yeah.
If he had gone, what's the lowest percentage that you could have gone where, like, I think maybe you could entertain having the conversation? Like 40%?
40%. I would say 60-40 Brady. Look, the fact of the matter is, if we just want to get empirical about this, like, let's look at the results after the two of them split up.
Yeah.
Brady went and won a Super Bowl the very next year in Tampa Bay. Yeah. And Bill Belichick made the playoffs 1 year with Mac Jones, and then the team fell off the face of the earth, largely due to horrible decisions by Bill Belichick, both in personnel and in staffing, in making Joe Judge and Matt Patricia a two-headed offensive coordinator of doom.
Which, by the way, it's always, that's another curious thing, because Andy Reid, another greatest coach of his division, he did the same damn thing at the end of his tenure with the Eagles.
Yeah.
He made an offensive line coach the defensive coordinator. Yeah. Like, it just, it, I don't, man, to hold together a dynasty like that for that long, it's not as much, it's not about just having a good quarterback. I mean, if that were the case, Mike McCarthy would have four Super Bowls right now.
That's right.
It's, you know, I always tend to revert to just, it's genuinely 50-50 that Belichick was the right guy for Brady and Brady was the right guy for Belichick. The biggest thing that, if you want to divvy up credit, The really interesting dynamic with the Patriots was always, for me, all right, Brady being willing to play below his market value for so long, despite having so much success. Does he do that for other coaches? Would he have done that for other coaches? And I think for Brady, it always felt like Brady understood that his best opportunity for success and the thing that was working was with Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And even though Belichick might grade against him and all of that, like, Brady just knew that, hey, I can go make more money elsewhere, but it's awful fun winning championships, and this is the right spot to do it. And it all starts, the structure of it all starts with Bill Belichick.
Yeah, you know what? We need to holster that audio. We need to keep that audio. Not the whole thing, but just Ted's take on it, and save it and play it for Caserio the next time we have him on. Not that Nick's going to assign percentages and things like that, but just to get his reaction to it.
I think Nick probably has the exact same take on it that I do.
I do too.
It's one of those things that you just, it's impossible. It was a really good relationship, you know? It was a really good relationship, and it was a really good pairing. Andy Reid is another great example. Hey, Andy Reid was a really, really, really good coach with Donovan McNabb.
Yep.
And he's a different coach with Pat Mahomes. Would Pat Mahomes be the same guy with Bobby Slowick as his offensive coordinator? I tend to think not. Mm-hmm. If Pat Mahomes, okay, if CJ Stroud had Andy Reid this past season as an offensive coordinator or Bobby Slowick, switch coordinators.
Right.
Or switch offensive minds. Who's the better quarterback this year?
Yeah.
I would put my money on CJ Stroud with Andy Reid. But it's impossible. It's just impossible to actually divvy up the credit in a situation like that.
Yeah, someone's saying, hey, it's worth noting Bill went 11-5 in 94 with the Browns and took them to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, no- I didn't expect that. Nobody ever brings that up, yeah. Yeah, you know who else? You know who won 11 games with him after that? Todd Haley with Matt Castle 2 years later. No, sorry, Seth.
They're bringing up when he was the coach of the Browns in 1994.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought he was the Matt. I heard 11-5. And I went straight
immediately
to
went
Castle.
To no, that was their record that year. Yeah, no, I get
right.
it.
Right? No, it's both. It's
yeah.
both.
Yeah, Belichick's a good coach. Yeah, Ted, yeah. No, Ted, yeah. Ted's wrong. like Ted's wrong. And I think, and I don't think Ted has a problem with us saying that. Like Ted, like the part, it, and I love Ted, but the part where he's like, how much credit do you really give a coach? Like 2%, 5%, 8%? Like, no, like a lot more than 10, you know? the funniest part of that was Ted's co-host going when he said 10%, and one of them, I don't know their names, one of
he
them
said
was just,
out of 100.
Out of 100. Yeah. When he's just bewildered, he goes, out of 100? That was hilarious.
I feel bad for Ted because this is going to be brought up all the time. He's never gonna be able to have an interaction, or at least for a long time, he's not gonna be able to have an interaction on social media or whatever without somebody bringing up, yeah, but aren't you the guy that
like the tweet that they tweeted it out, like the station, like they highlighted the 10%, which is what you do to get people to click on the video, but they called it like 10% Teddy or something like that. Like they nicknamed him or something, like 10% Teddy or whatever.
The biggest problem with guys who come out of New England to be head coaches or that came out of the Belichick tree was that I felt like each one of them genuinely felt like he was responsible for 10%.
Yes.
Like Matt Patricia felt like, yeah, I was responsible for at least 10% of that.
Right. That's good stuff, man. Good job by Ted, man. Got people talking. That's got people.
Yeah.
Got things popping. It was lively, man. Like, you know, the old saying, man, you add pizza and Ted Johnson to any situation, and it gets popping, baby.
Why did I write Jason Garrett down in my notes?
I don't know why you wrote Jason Garrett, but the other thing you wrote down on the rundown that I thought is a really good point you haven't touched on yet, which was your very first bullet point.
Oh, yeah. Could this pull Ted closer to Bob Kraft?
Yes.
Bob Kraft seems to be trying to diminish Belichick's legacy via documentary and other methods. Yeah.
And if that's the case, then Ted Johnson is a delicate genius.
This is Machiavellian.
Yeah,
I think it is. Bob Kraft is in his office, darkened office, smoking a cigar, streaming, because he had his assistant set up the stream for him. And he hears Ted Johnson say that. He's like, oh, this, I never gave Ted enough credit. Really, for those first three Super Bowl victories, I'd say Ted was responsible for 12% of them.
85% Ted Johnson. All right, hey, if you want to get to Vegas, one good way to do it, the best way to get to Vegas, I would say, would be to try to win the Slam Dunk Trip to Vegas contest that we've got going on right now. The trip could be yours. How? by tuning in to Sports Radio 610 for an hour a day on the Odyssey app, live, rewind, show, podcast. Doesn't matter. Whatever. However you listen to it, just do it for at least 60 minutes and or any participating station on the Odyssey app, and you earn your daily entry. So do it every day. You earn your daily entry for you and three friends to potentially win a trip to Vegas in March, each with an extra $5K in your pockets for the ultimate college basketball tournament experience. Just log in and listen now if you're not already on the Odyssey app for your chance to win this national contest. We did the Texans' four best offensive plays earlier. I got the poll up already. People are voting. We're going to announce the winners tomorrow. We're going to do the four best defensive plays. This was a much harder list to come up with. The four best defensive plays for the Houston Texans in 2024. We'll run through those, put up a poll, let you vote on it coming up next.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Hi, Pain and Pendergast with you. Seth is scouring the internet up in the Boston area just to check on Ted.
I'm going to be full. I'll be in full Bostonian mode. I'm going to go to Dunkin' Donuts and take in Boston sports chatter. The counterpoint some people are bringing up in favor of Ted, which is this is again where it gets... You're arguing about two separate things. It's like, okay, if you're going to genuinely divvy up percentages, like, oh, okay, what, you know, the various great players defensively, some of the people in the front office, some of the assistants, Josh McDaniels, like, okay, it gets a lot harder to divvy it all up. But Ted put, what, 50% on Brady?
60.
And then
60%
yeah, for those, on
yeah,
Brady.
For those who missed it, Ted Johnson on Boston radio yesterday
yeah.
was asked to divvy up the credit for the Patriots dynasty. He gave 60% to Brady, 30% to others, a nebulous yeah. others, and 10% to Bill Belichick.
So Belichick was fighting for scraps in that 40%.
Yes.
So it'd be 10% Brady and then a lot of the other great players yeah. or whomever else, people in the front office
right.
After that.
Yep.
It's hard when it's... The problem is, I mean, Caserio was one of the last guys remaining from of the original staff.
Yeah.
That, you know, so
first Super Bowls, yeah.
It's really hard to figure out when you look at the first Super Bowl to the last one, there's only a few guys that were there the entire time.
Yeah.
Brady, Belichick, Caserio, and a couple others.
Yep. Yeah, like, for example, like this Chiefs dynasty that we're in right now, and I think by modern standards, it's a dynasty, It's much easier to do it with the Chiefs. Like it's the Reed and Mahomes and Kelsey show, and then everybody else is, to use your phrase, fighting for the scraps after that, I think.
And they still have to win three more Super Bowls as well.
But I think it's yeah. but I do think they're a dynasty. You know, like they're not the Patriots yeah. dynasty yet, but like you go to five Super Bowls in 6 years. Like I think the Astros are a dynasty, you know, by baseball standards. They won two World
I guess
Series.
Okay, but if you go with the three Super Bowls dynasties, a three Super Bowl dynasty, if you looked at the original Patriots and their three Super Bowls,
yeah.
I think at that point whatever Ted's percentages would be, I think it would be easier to put more of it on Belichick.
Yes.
Because Brady wasn't as polished by a long shot as he would become. So I think the ability to do what he did, including winning that first Super Bowl, yeah. where that was an unimpressive roster. You know, that first yeah. Super Bowl was an accomplishment.
They were 13.5-point underdogs to the Rams in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And granted, it was a great Rams team, greatest show on turf. But that team was not supposed to get to the Super Bowl. I don't even know they were supposed to get to the playoffs at the beginning of the year. I have no idea. I think that early one, and you know what? We may save the best four defensive plays for the next segment, Ben, when we got a little more space. We're just this bad placement by me. We're up against it on this segment, but we got plenty of text to get to in this segment. But to put a bow on your point, I think the first three championships would have been 60% Belichick, you know? In that dynasty there. We're getting react to a lot of stuff here on the text page, so we can hit that for a few minutes. Serious question. Ooh, I like that beginning to a text. Serious question. Is CJ Stroud a max contract guy based on performance? I think he will be, but right now he's not better than Sam Darnold.
All right. This is the problem. Throw logic out the window and throw out how you think the quarterback contract should be doled out or what have you. The simple fact of the matter is he probably will be, regardless of just what this next season looks like, barring an absolute disaster. Tua Tagovailoa and Trevor Lawrence got huge, huge contracts.
Yeah.
And Trevor Lawrence's was more lucrative, right? And it was close to Joe Burrow's.
Yes.
It was it wasn't the highest paid quarterback in the league, but
it's tied with Joe Burrow on AAV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think CJ has already shown a higher ceiling than Trevor Lawrence. So it'll be a huge surprise if CJ doesn't get that contract. Yeah. So I guess the question isn't whether he will get it or not. It's, has he demonstrated that, like, okay, if it were more of a meritocracy when you're giving out quarterback contracts, would he be? Not yet. I think that it's got to be, you want two seasons that you feel as good about afterwards as the first season.
As his rookie year.
There want to be, like, the way you felt after 2023, you want to feel that way after 2025. And then it's a slam dunk because he's young. In that scenario, he would have been healthy. If he goes on and only slightly improves on this season, he's still going to get the contract because that's just the way the NFL has to operate right now.
Yep.
But I don't think that it's a slam dunk that he should get that contract.
So I agree with everything you just said. I just want to, if he has the same season this coming season, the same season that he had his rookie year, how will you feel about that contract?
I'd feel like that's just the way you got to operate in today's NFL. It's basically a hedge.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where if you're a team and you get into that after that third season, you either got to commit to that guy because you hope he works out, and if he does work out, it's going to cost you even way more to do it 1 year down the line. We saw this with Dak Prescott. The Cowboys ended up paying way more the next year, and that was after a devastating ankle injury, than they would have in that moment. The other option is, okay, we're going to have to roll our dice on an unproven rookie at some point or try to trade for somebody. They just like the potential security of him. And it's, I feel like teams could draw a harder line than they do, but it's just the way things are. It's multiple different factors. That's the way it is these days. But as a fan, like, I would probably feel like Jaguars fans might have felt about Trevor. If CJ had the exact same season this next year, I would feel probably how Jaguars fans felt about giving Trevor Lawrence that contract. You're like, well, yeah, I don't think that's necessarily what he deserves right now, but this is who we're rolling with. Let's do it.
For me personally, it would take a really, really bad year from CJ Stroud next year and then them giving him a contract. Like, he'd have to be worse than this year was for me to feel super nervous about it. I guess, but I'm with you, Seth. Like, if he had the same year he had his rookie year, do I feel a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10? Like, if they go 10-7, win the division, CJ puts up pretty good, not like eye-popping numbers, not like Lamar numbers, but efficient numbers like he did his rookie year, I feel good about it. I feel like we got the guy and we've got a chance. I think the thing that would make me feel great about it, having to do with the 2025 season, is if he actually goes out and beats Lamar Jackson, if he actually goes out and beats Patrick Mahomes in the regular season. You know, if he actually, I'm trying to think of who
Jordan Love. Jordan Love.
Yeah, Jordan Love. Yeah, yeah. Like, for next year, it would be like they play the West. Oh, for
the big contract guys.
Yeah, like Matthew Stafford. Next year, they play the Rams. Guys like that.
I'll tell you what. You know what I try to do sometimes in scenarios like this? I think if you ask C.J. Stroud the same question right now, and it wasn't in front of cameras, and you got a true unfiltered response.
Yep.
I think CJ, I'm guessing CJ would feel like, no, my standards are way higher than what this year was.
Yeah.
I wouldn't feel like, now negotiating and, you know, all that other stuff, that's a whole different deal. But like at the core of it, I feel like CJ expects more out of himself, and there's reasons for why his numbers were what they were and everything this year. But yeah, I don't think CJ would feel like, oh yeah, right after this season, this is slam dunk. That's what I deserve.
Now that's interesting. Because I don't necessarily disagree. Other than this,
sounds like you disagree.
He did. Well, no. I'm just making a counterpoint because I do think CJ. I think CJ's wired the way you're talking about, generally speaking. Yeah. But we know he was on that tour last year of everybody just feeding him the rat poison about how great he was. He did sit down on a couch and was asked to list the top five quarterbacks in the league and put himself at number three.
Right. and you know what he said at the end of the season? He said, I thought I knew, but I didn't know
exactly
what it took to be the guy in the NFL. I think that it was for a guy that I think genuinely tries to strive for humility, the hardest thing in the world for an NFL quarterback is you get just bombarded with adulation everywhere you turn.
Yep.
And last year especially, You couldn't find a film watcher or somebody that knew what they were talking about who weren't absolutely gushing about CJ Stroud's rookie year.
They were sitting down with him at the Super Bowl with iPads, asking him to take us through this amazing throw that you made.
And it's almost impossible to not have that affect you.
Yeah,
and that's why ultimately I think this year was probably really good for CJ because he really realizes now, and he. I think if you were to ask him directly about saying, you know, putting himself in that top five, I think he basically said, yeah, I didn't know what I was talking about back then.
Yeah, I think
now
if,
I do.
If you play that video for him, forget about playing the video of the amazing throws. Go back and put that on the iPad, him putting himself in the top five. I think he would cringe a little bit at that.
Yeah.
You know, like that he
so
did
I
that.
Think him turning down the Pro Bowl alternate invitation and I think it's going to be a more subdued offseason for CJ. I think he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder that he's placing there himself.
Yep.
That he's disappointed in the way the year went, and he's gonna really just really dial in and focus.
Good stuff. That was a good question. Appreciate it. On the text page, 713-572-4610 on the text page.
Yeah, that whole given the quarterbacks their third year, I feel like I probably feel like most fans, like, what, you guys have the guy under control for theoretically 7 years total, like five more years. Why is it the standard that they're giving the contract? There are reasons why they do give him those contracts, but I'm still not entirely comfortable with it, but I'm just trying to accept that that's the way business is done in the NFL.
I'm comfortable with giving it to the good ones. It's giving it to Trevor Lawrence that's an issue I have.
Well,
you know?
Tua Tagovailoa with his concussion history and everything else. Yeah, that's the tough part of it.
Yep. Hey, we're headed to New Orleans for Radio Row. We're looking forward to that, and we thank Flight by Yingling for sending us there. We have cases and cases and cases of Flight by Yingling for our Airbnb, and we thank them for that. Flight by Yingling's been a great partner for us throughout the football season. Thank the Low T Center as well, a supporting sponsor sending us to Radio Row. And, of course, Exclusive Furniture sponsoring the hot seat. You get a hot seat at Exclusive Furniture. They're going to sponsor that. That's where all the guests will be sitting that we bring on, and we promise they'll be good guests on Radio Row. Up next, we will circle back. Top five plays on defense. We'll get to that in this segment. Latest on the Texans' search for an offensive coordinator as well. Into the 9 o'clock hour we go on Payne and Pendergast.